Hi, I'm David Fetter, Executive Editor Technical for Prepared Foods. Welcome to Prepared Foods special presentation on trends in sugar reduction and new sweeteners. Sugar reduction is by far one of the biggest trends in the food and beverage industry, yet it runs parallel and sometimes at odds with indulgence and comfort. And this is especially so at times of stress that we've all been going through. Consumers have been told many times that they can have it all, indulgent, comforting treats that are healthful, and they don't have to compromise on quality or flavor. But until recently, the promises were about as empty as the calories when it came to flavor and experience. It took a while, but ingredient technology and craftsmanship finally came together to change that paradigm and make healthful indulgence more than just a marketing ploy. And proof is in products made by companies like Good Sam Foods. Good Sam is a B Corp maker of vegan, direct trade, keto-friendly products ranging from nuts and coffee to cake and brownie mixes, and especially sugar-free chocolate bars and confections. I gotta confess, those are my favorites. Joining us today is Heather Terry. She's the CEO of Good Sam, and she's agreed to share with us a little bit of her journey in bringing these two opposing forces of good tasting and good for you together. Hey, Heather.
Hey,
welcome.
Thanks for having me, David. I really appreciate it.
Glad to have you. I want to dive right into the chocolates first, because as I said, they're my favorites. And I'll be honest, I tried your product. I came away very impressed because, as you can imagine, I get about a million of these sugar-free chocolates, you know, across my desk and have so throughout my career. And Good Sam was one of the very first brands I've ever had that hit all the right notes. So I got to ask, is your secret allulose?
It's a couple of things, I think. So first of all, David, I've been part of the confection industry since 2009. I'm the original founder of Nibmore Chocolate. I got to do chocolate for a really long time. I'm a trained pastry chef and chocolatier. I studied with the likes of people like Jacques Torres and everybody down at International Culinary Center and, really perfected my skill and the craft of fine chocolate. Chocolate is chemistry, right? It is chemistry, and it has a lot to do with texture and temper and the grittiness or the smoothness of a sweetener, right? That's really, really important. So that part for me, that texture piece of it, the creaminess or the grittiness or whatever it is that we're bringing to the table for me, even at Nibmore, was really, really important. And bringing that part of it to Good Sam was equally important. Now, because I come from the world of cane sugar sweetened chocolates, right? That's what we did at Nibmore. We were, in fact, the first non-GMO verified chocolate brand on the market. We were very early in that trend. But I think when I thought about what to do here, right around that time, allulose was kind of coming, bubbling up in the narrative, right? It was coming up to the surface. People were starting to talk about it, and I thought, okay, well, this one's really interesting. 70% is sweet as sugar, essentially a pass-through, completely excreted in the urine, and has a sugar mouthfeel, which is really unique when you think of alternative sweetener profiles, right? You don't get that sugar mouthfeel from most of them. When you think about monk fruit and stevia, it really hits different parts of your palate, and that's what makes it so sort of cloying for some people, so unpalatable for some people. Allulose really reacts like sugar on your palate, and that's what makes it so unique. So yeah, it's a little bit allulose, and I think a little bit my sort of my preference.
Magic.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm very open that I'm a Virgo, and so I'm very particular, and of course in chocolate making that's really served me.
You might not remember this because we met probably 10 years ago when you were with Nibmore.
Really?
Organic Processing Magazine introduced us. And so Nibmore blew me away because you had the first dark chocolate that had a richness as opposed to a bitterness. And I was just totally impressed with your dark chocolate. We, wrote a little bit about it in Prepared Foods back then. Did you run into any challenges at all in formulating with allulose?
Yes.
Was it a one-to-one replay? You did. Okay, let's hear it.
Yes. It was, with any more crystalline sugar, you're going to have problems, right? So when it's heated, it tends to go glassy, right? It can break apart really simply versus cane sugar, which takes a much longer time to caramelize. And so you have a lot more time on your side. So formulating the bars had some challenges. It was a little bit easier. With our candy coated items, it was extraordinarily difficult. That was a big, big challenge for us. And in fact, you know, the chocolate component of those candy coated items is allulose. The external shell is isomalt, right? Because we could not get allulose to actually pan. We're looking at other alternatives to the isomalt right now. I mean, look, isomalt is a, you know, I know a lot of, it is a sugar alcohol. It's very little in our product, but you know, isomalt is sort of a pastry chef's creative landscape, right? We use isomalt as professionals to create sculptures. And it was interesting to try to pan allulose, but it wouldn't go. And we tried for months before we abandoned ship. So we're looking at a couple of different options to boot the isomalt, but we're still in the early phase of that due to availability of other ingredients. You have a very short window with which to play with that ingredient over heat before it just turns into something that looks like glass, edible glass.
In pastry chef, you know, baking, that could come in very handy, but in making a chocolate bar,
not so much.
And it is highly hygroscopic, yes. So that's going to be part and parcel to all that.
Exactly.
But on sweetness, did it give you any, did allulose give you any difficulties?
Yeah,
or did you have
sure. Because with it only being 70% of sweetest sugar, you have to use more to get to an American palate similarity, right? So, you know, at Nibmore, I formulated bars at 70, 72, and 80. You know, we took this down to a 55, which really tastes more like a 75 or an 85, right? So a lot of people will say to us, oh, it tastes darker than what it is. Well, yeah, because allulose is only 70% as sweet as sugar, right? So you get a little oomph in this bar from a flavor perspective, but you were trying to raise that sweetness so that it can really appeal to an American consumer who's used to a sweeter product.
Well, I've worked some with allulose myself, and I found that the one thing that it will do is elevate chocolate back notes in a chocolate or in a fruit confection, brings out the fruit. And I think it's because it's in a chemical analog of fructose, so, you know, more so than sucrose. But I can see where there are places where it's going to be a blessing and places where it's going to be a challenge. And, you know, it sounds like you've got that worked out.
There are other products that we make, like our brownie mix, which is, you know, 50% allulose. And that is much more sweet because we're trying to match again, that palate of the American consumer. Yeah. Then we have products like our cake mix and our pancakes that are very, very low allulose. Those types of pastry applications we're able to kind of take down the sweetness without sacrificing the taste. And so we do, right?
Thanks very much for that great, you know, in-depth look at, you know, how you're making these chocolates, how you're working with allulose. I think it's eye-opening, and it helps our viewers, listeners, readers, you know, when we bring these firsthand reports. I want to dive right into other aspects of Good Sam. Your products are also direct trade, sustainable, and rely on regenerative agriculture. First of all, real quick, what's the difference between direct trade and fair trade?
Yeah, so there's a huge difference between it, David. And that was something, you know, I talk a lot about direct trade in terms of how it relates back to my days at Nibmore, because that is where I learned about the system, right? And there's nothing wrong with fair trade groups. They're really, really great for small and mid-size businesses to participate in, because if you don't have enough volume to do direct business with farmers or communities, it can be a very cumbersome challenge to try to do that. It's very, very difficult, right? So when we were at Nibmore and we were just starting out, we totally bought in on fair trade. We paid our 1% of top line revenue. That money gets deployed however the fair trade groups decide, right? So what we started hearing in the field, Jennifer and I, back in those days, was well, the fair trade groups dictate to us how that money needs to be spent. Oh, well, we're not really getting what we need from those initiatives. You know, it's one thing to give that premium to a farmer and that goes straight into their pocket. But when you talk about that 1% gets distributed not only in just the way those groups want it to within the communities, but it pays for their overhead, right? You're paying for them to operate. You're paying for them to audit those farms for you. You're paying for them to make sure they're paying the fair trade premiums. It's fine, right? But it's not ideal, right? When Good Sam came across my desk, there was an opportunity to work directly with farmers, cooperatives, and associations. And what we do is we take that 1% that we would have paid to those fair trade groups, and we reinvest it into the farmers and cooperatives and associations that we work with. We're funding projects that grow our communities. That's very important to us at Good Sam, because if we believe in smallholder farmers and Indigenous people and their ability to feed the world, and if we believe, right, in regenerative systems, then we have to grow those systems. Our business strategy, David, is to grow those communities, to get them what they need through those programs in order for them to grow with us. Right?
Oh, yeah. It's very much the difference between give a fish and teach to fish. And it sounds like you guys have shifted to the teach to fish
paradigm.
Teach
to fish, exactly. And they get to really be involved, right? And we're involved to support, but it's the community doing it, right? It's the community coming together to make the project happen. Local materials. We're not bringing anything from cities, you know, all of it. So it's, you know, I think it's just a different way of looking at it. And it's one that's just really, really important to us as a business.
Well, so then as a business, tell me, how tough is it to source the ingredients that you use in order to meet all these different criteria and all at once?
I have an extremely talented operations team. I cannot take credit for what we do on the ground. We vertically integrate in country as much as we can, David. So we bring in local partners to help us on the ground in order to create alliances that then those farmers can count on. Because who is Good Sam to them? Nobody. But who is somebody else in country? A brand they maybe know or a co-manufacturer that they know, that establishes immediate trust. So yeah, you know, I've always said to investors and people who have asked us this question, it's difficult, but not impossible. And actually, once you start doing it, it becomes the most liberating path to not have to rely on brokers and middlemen and all that dealing in between, right? To us, that is prohibitive to the growth of our business to have all those middle layers.
Well, no, I can see where in one sense it's a trade-off, but in the other sense, you are creating your own supply chain and having that insurance with it. Have you been able to enlist any of the larger ingredient companies to help you with sourcing and consistent supply?
The only larger scale ingredient producer that we work with is in our allulose supply chain, and that is it. Everything
and
else.
You don't have to name names. You just.
I'm not going to name names, but it's, you know, there are only a handful of them. So if you dig deep enough, you're going to find them. I think everything else, obviously, we do is all direct, and we have those relationships, and we know those farmers, and we know those associations and cooperatives.
Okay, good. So let's talk about some of the other products you mentioned earlier. You've got the cake and brownie mixes, which, seem to come from the opposite end of the spectrum as does coffee. When you start talking about what I've always coined, you know, social ingredients, the direct trade and organic and, that sort of thing. Now, consumers have been overwhelmingly receptive to fair trade, direct trade coffee. And now they're slowly taking to, understand regenerative ag concerns in these products. But how tough has it been to market, and I should maybe say, get the same bang for the marketing buck out of that for cakes and brownies, because these are like the most indulgent comfort foods on the planet, where most people think.
You know, I never did a baking mix, and that was a challenge for me, because I think there's a lot of really poorly executed baking mixes out there. So formulating with allulose was really important for me to show the keto landscape that there was a product out there that could play in landscape and could be good and could be something that they could say, wow, this is really delicious. Like, I like this. So I felt like I really did my job in that SKU, right? And I think, yes, coffee, we've seen direct trade, fair trade, same thing with chocolate to a certain degree. I think it's just becoming transparency in general and sustainability. ESG concepts are becoming more and more important to consumers. Companies like Good Sam start to take market share because we are invested in things like regenerative ag and direct trade. It is going to start really disrupting the space, right? In cocoa, this is especially important, right? Because my entire career, I have never sourced from West Africa, because that is where the slave trade is. That is where we have children in the supply chain who are working illegally, who are working under conditions that no child should ever be working in. You know, I often say to parents who ask me about slavery and chocolate, I say, well, when your kid brings home their Halloween bucket, how are you going to explain to them that every single chocolate item in this bucket is being produced by a child who is being abused and forsaken in a foreign country? You know, this joyful holiday, this thing that and I know that sounds harsh, but that is the truth of the matter. And the industry has not been taken to task for it. Consumers need to hear more. And I've dedicated my entire career to exposing that and to not enabling that particular supply chain to shine through the products and the brands that I've brought to market. And I'll continue to do so. I think the world is ready for it. I think Gen Z is ready for it. I think, you know, millennials have demanded it to a certain degree, but certainly Gen Z is ready. They're ready to take that charge on. Cheap chocolate, and this is just a fact, and I know I'm not popular in the industry for saying this. I've said it on many podcasts. I've said it on many video platforms. Cheap chocolate is slave chocolate. If you are paying an amount of money that you think is so great in the chocolate supply chain, on a bar, on a candy bar, on anything, you are engaging in the child, and you're engaging in the child slavery business, and you're engaging in human trafficking. Period. Full stop.
Wow, that's heavy stuff to take home. So, I hate to do it because we're on a short time crunch, but let's switch gears again. And let's talk about the technical challenges in formulation, all those things that have proven to be the most challenging for you and how you surmounted them, the technical stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always asking for something that's impossible. You could ask my partners down in Colombia. I feel so badly for them, because I'm always asking for more. I'm always asking for us to innovate further. I was just, you know, we have a really good honey supply chain within our coffee and cacao supply chain. So everything grows together, and we've got an abundance of honey in two particular associations, actually. And I've gone back and I said, okay, guys, I want to use this honey. And they're like, no, we're going to use this granulated honey. I was like, no, you're not, actually. You're going to use the liquid stuff that we're getting from the associations. And they look at me like I have four heads. But at Nipmore, we did chocolate bars with agave nectar. And we got our co-manufacturer to invest in equipment that emulsified that liquid sweetener into chocolate. It is possible. It is doable. We will get there. We will find a way to do it, right? So I'm always pushing the envelope. Sometimes we completely fail and that product gets taken off the docket, right? Or we have to revamp into something else. You know, if this doesn't work, then we'll just come out with some honey or limited edition or something, you know, that makes sense. But I'm always pushing the envelope in that way. For me in my career, I've kind of, done my time, and I'm ready to stretch a brand like this a little bit further.
Well, good. And I hope you stretch it to the ends of the earth, which it sounds like you already have. So good products, good information. Thank you, Heather. Thank you so much. This was Heather Terry giving us a fantastic inside look at her impressive company and its offerings. And so thank you, listeners, viewers, for joining us today. And by all means, check out our expanded offering of videos and podcasts and other content at preparedfoods.com. Check out right under the media menu for more of the on-trend videos and podcasts that help our food and beverage formulators out there, and as brought to you by the top experts in the industry. Thank you all. Look forward to seeing you again. Thank you, Heather.
Thanks so much, David.
Bye.